Welcome to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts, featuring presentations by leading Cleveland Clinic physicians and medical experts. Today's speaker, Dr. Kelly Richter, presents treating osteoarthritis of the knee.
So my name is Kelly Richter. I work right here in Strongsville. I'm here 3 days a week. I do technically what's called primary care sports medicine, but I see orthopedic issues, and we treat a lot of knee osteoarthritis, and that's what we're going to talk about this evening. Essentially conservative management of knee osteoarthritis. So just to start off, what is osteoarthritis? So osteoarthritis is a condition where the articular cartilage wears away from the bone at a joint. And so when we talk about the knee joint in particular, there's two kinds of cartilage. So some people will, If you look at my arrow, we'll talk about tearing cartilage in their knee, and they're usually referring to their meniscus, which is a structure. It's made of cartilage and it sits in the middle of the knee. But the articular cartilage attaches to the bone, and so it's smooth. And this, in this picture of the knee, this is the femur, this is the tibia, and again there's articular cartilage on both sides of the bone. And then if you look at the top, this is the kneecap. So on the undersurface of the kneecap, there is cartilage as well. And so when someone has knee osteoarthritis, what has happened is that this articular cartilage essentially has worn away. And again, it could be in one or two or three of the compartments of the knee. The patella, the medial compartment, this is the inside of the knee. The lateral compartment, this would be the outside of the knee, because this is the fibula, the little bone on the outside of the leg. And so as this articular cartilage wears away, essentially that process leads to inflammation, pain, and swelling. And unfortunately, osteoarthritis is progressive. There's progressive degeneration. Once it's started, it will continue to deteriorate. And so when someone comes in, we're concerned they might have osteoarthritis of the knees. One of the tests that we'll do is x-rays. X-rays do not show cartilage. And so again, osteoarthritis is wearing away of the articular cartilage. And I tell patients is that we can't actually see the cartilage, but normally as that cartilage wears away, bones get closer together, and as bones start rubbing against each other, they make spurs and cysts. And so on an x-ray, we'd be looking for narrowed spaces, spurs, and cysts. On this x-ray, you can see that there's very nice, clean, uniform spaces between the bones, and the kneecap here is nice and smooth surface. And again, if you look on this picture, we're looking underneath of the kneecaps, and you see the kneecap is a little off-center, but more importantly, no spurs, no cysts, narrow, nice spaces. Whereas on this x-ray, I think it's pretty obvious, you can see that on this medial or inside compartment of the knee, clearly there's almost no space. When people talk about bone-on-bone arthritis, this is what they're referring to. Even compared to this knee, again, this knee has some arthritis as well. It's narrowed, but it's nothing compared to this knee. And this knee has both medial and lateral narrowing. And you can see very easily here on the kneecaps, you have reasonable space here, but here you're bone on bone, and then a large bone spur has formed. And same thing on this side. You have a bone spur on both sides. So just to give you an idea of what we're looking at when we look at the x-rays. So risk factors for osteoarthritis, I mean, just basic things that most people are aware of. I mean, heredity, I mean, if you're have several family members with arthritis, there's obviously a chance you could have it. I mean, you inherit your cartilage like you inherit a lot of your other characteristics, and some cartilage wears better than others. Weight, higher weight, I mean, increased weight puts more stress and pressure on the cartilage and will increase your risk for developing osteoarthritis. Age, again, just as we get older, it's harder for the cartilage to heal itself, and so there's a greater risk, but not all people develop arthritis as they age. Women over 50 are at higher risk than men. And then trauma, so especially in our younger patients, especially now with more injuries, when you hear about these anterior cruciate ligament injuries, we always worry about young people or people who have kneecaps that may slip or dislocate. I mean, that increases their risk. Any kind of trauma can injure the cartilage and increase their risk for osteoarthritis. So just starting off with oral medications, just your basic, you know, over-the-counter, obviously acetaminophen. Tylenol has the lowest risks. I always remind people that you can kill yourself with Tylenol. So even though we consider it low risk, every medicine has a risk. But acetaminophen has fewest risks. The biggest issue is, will it help or not? So some people will tell you Tylenol does nothing for them. Other people, it works very well. NSAIDs, when we talk about NSAIDs, that stands for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. And so your over-the-counter choices are Advil, Motrin, Ibuprofen, Naprosyn, Aleve, and then there are a whole slew of prescription anti-inflammatories. For most patients, they will tell you that an anti-inflammatory works better for them than Tylenol. However, we worry much more about potential side effects. And the you know, even though any drug, you can open up the pamphlet of side effects and read every side effect up to the point of death, the things that we see most frequently, one is stomach upset. So any anti-inflammatory can cause stomach upset. Sometimes that's reflux. Sometimes it's to the point of causing an ulcer. They can raise a patient's blood pressure. And so if someone is taking an anti-inflammatory regularly, I always tell them to check their blood pressure. It can cause swelling. It can thin the blood more. So anyone on blood thinners, Coumadin, warfarin, should not be taking an anti-inflammatory, especially not regularly, because again, it thins the blood further and can cause risks from that perspective. And then obviously, there was the FDA announced, you know, they're going to increase the black box warning in regards to heart attack and stroke with anti-inflammatories, again, including the over-the-counter anti-inflammatories, noting that you don't have to be using them for long periods of time to increase your risk. So if you're someone who has already had a heart attack or has heart conditions, there's a greater concern, you know, that of increasing your risk for those problems using an anti-inflammatory. So again, the basic recommendations, if someone takes an anti-inflammatory, you would start at the lowest dose. If you're going to take it, obviously take it with food, take it the shortest amount of time that you can, you know, if you can not use it every day. I mean, those are all good things. And then the prescription anti-inflammatories, like I said, just some examples, Relafen, Celebrex, Lodine, Meloxicam, or Mobic. I mean, these are all prescription forms of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, but they can have, the same risks that the over-the-counters can. And I haven't found one of these drugs that anyone that works for every patient, and I haven't found any one of the drugs that doesn't work for any patient. So it's really patient-dependent. We just haven't found out a way to know without trying what works best. Supplements, briefly again, in regards to supplements, you know, patients will tell you, I mean, I have patients who swear by them and I have patients who have tried them and they really don't notice any difference at all. And so glucosamine chondroitin probably has had the most research, and there is, you know, some patients do find benefit with that. What I remind patients is you're not regenerating your cartilage when you take glucosamine chondroitin. You're not putting cartilage back into your joints. Some patients take it, and they do have improvement of their pain, but it can take up to 6 weeks to have an effect, and so you want to, if you're going to try it, give it a fair try. But if you don't notice a difference, then it's not cheap. You know, it's probably not worth trying, and there's multiple forms of it. You can find it in drinks and powders and pills and capsules. Flaxseed, krill oil, fish oil, again, has omega-3 fatty acids. Again, I've had some people will tell you that works great for them. Other people don't notice a significant difference. And then turmeric is one that's more recently out there as far as having supposed to have some anti-inflammatory properties. And so some patients will take that and notice a difference. And again, others will not. And then there's narcotic pain medication. So we try and avoid narcotic pain medication. Because it's a narcotic, and obviously narcotics can be addictive. That's our first concern, and so, and also they have side effects depending on the patient, but as patients get older, we worry more about they can make you sleepy or sedated. They can potentially affect balance or might make someone feel dizzy. They can cause constipation. It's probably the biggest concern people have with them is they can create constipation. Again, every patient responds to pain medications differently, but we tend to think of these as in a tier level. So Ultram or Tramadol is absolutely, an opioid. It's a prescription drug, but it's a controlled substance. But it would be considered almost an entry level. Then hydrocodone is the active ingredient in what we used to prescribe more as Vicodin. Vicodin now we prescribe more as Norco, and that's simply because they adjusted how much Tylenol is in the medication. Lortab is another name for hydrocodone. And then oxycodone or Percocet would, for most patients, again, would be considered the strongest. So like I said, I mean, we try and minimize this, but some patients can't take anti-inflammatories. Some patients have excessive pain at night or, you know, at times that we just will use these, and we try and use them on an as-needed basis. Some patients can't, have tried everything else and nothing's worked, you know, so we may go to these, but we try and minimize narcotic pain medication. Topicals. So there are topical anti-inflammatories. Sometimes the thought is if someone has a sensitive stomach and can't tolerate the oral medications, there is Voltaren or diclofenac gel. Capsaicin is more of an, it's a pepper, comes from the pepper, and helps interfere with the pain cycle. Menthol, just simple menthol. A lot of different forms of that people will rub on, like an old Benke. And then there is a lidoderm patch. So lidoderm is a numbing, topical numbing medication. So literally you're putting a patch over the joint just to try and numb it. And for some patients that's helpful, for others it's not. The biggest issue with a lidoderm patch is getting it approved through insurance. So a lot of insurances won't pay for the lidoderm patch and they're very expensive. Heat and cold, people will invariably ask which is better, heat or cold. And with arthritis, both can be good. When the knee is acutely swollen, cold scientifically makes the most sense because cold causes the blood vessels to constrict more and can help decrease swelling. But the joint sometimes feels better with heat because it's stiff, and when it needs, you know, to be to kind of relaxed and get moving, heat can oftentimes feel better. So again, in the chronic conditions, some patients, it just depends. Some feel better with heat, some feel better with cold. But I would say if someone has a flare of their arthritis and the knee is swollen, then cold is the better choice. I'm just very briefly going to touch on diet because I am not a dietitian. And again, just having conversations with patients, I mean, we hear a lot more these days. I don't know if you watch Dr. Oz or not. He's been big on this, but like an anti-inflammatory type diet. So there are certain foods out there that that are considered to be more anti-inflammatory, such as leafy greens, blueberries, particular teas, the miso, the pickles, the sauerkraut. It's not going to be an entire diet, but they're staying away from, again, high processed foods, high sugar foods, and that's just a good idea for your diet regardless. Again, foods that are considered to have more antioxidant characteristics. Not that this is going to take away necessarily arthritis pain, but there are some, you know, people who will adjust their diet and will say they notice a significant difference. So these are just some examples of antioxidant type foods. And then spices. Again, for people who are just more holistic in general, cloves, ginger, rosemary, these are all, you can take them naturally or you can find them in tablet form. For some patients, they'll notice improvement of their inflammation. So exercise. Exercise is good. When you have arthritis, it's important to move the joint. There are three ways that we talk about exercise. One is non-impact, so meaning there's no pressure on the joint. So that would be, for instance, a recumbent bike or an elliptical machine or being in the water. I tell people they can be in the water. They don't have to swim. You don't have to like to swim. You can walk in the water. You can do exercises in the water. But most people, when they exercise and move their joint, find that they feel better. It's just you have to find the exercise that works for your joint and not overdo. You're on a, you know, some people are on more of a tight rope. If they do too much, that will bother their joints. If they don't do enough, it may bother the joint too. So low impact, you know, be something more like walking, whereas high impact obviously would be something more like running or jazzercise or Zumba, you know, something of that nature. And most of the time, by the time patients are seeing me, they're having enough symptoms with their arthritis that they'll find that if they minimize their high impact exercises, they feel significantly better. But exercise in general, it's very good to keep the muscle strong around the knee. It decreases pain, and it's good just, again, to keep the joint loose. Physical therapy, two types of physical therapy, land therapy and water therapy. Again, some people just have enough pain on land that they do better to start off in water. It completely takes the pressure off of the joint. Land therapy, ideally, again, we work on the whole core, strengthen from the gluteal muscles, the hip muscles all the way down because the lower extremity is a chain. And you'll always find some patient who went to physical therapy who didn't have a good experience, but more patients than that, you know, do find that learning those exercises, if they maintain them, is very helpful. braces, again, it's really patient dependent. You know, some people, for most patients, they would tell you it just feels better to have some kind of compression or warmth on their joint. So the neoprene sleeve would obviously be just your introductory level there. We have something called a reaction osteoarthritis brace, and so more on this gray area. It's a little sleeker, it's not as bulky. You may have heard of what we call an unloader brace. So if a patient were to have arthritis on the inside compartment of their knee, when you put pressure, there's this unloader brace literally puts pressure to take, to adjust the knee, the mechanics of the knee, so that there's less pressure where the arthritis is, and it distributes the pressure over the remainder of the knee. And so this is a brace you'd wear primarily with activity. Again, you know, some people find them very helpful, other people will get them and they're bulky, they're heavy, they're, you know, they don't like them. So it's very patient dependent. We try and let them go to therapy or be fitted with them and get an idea, you know, before they actually order the full brace. Injections. So the cortisone injection. Most patients, when they come in, someone's told them how painful cortisone injections are, how horrible they are. But I get hugs from patients after cortisone injections. Cortisone can be a wonderful, wonderful thing, but it is a steroid, okay? And so the concerns with steroids is that if you put too much steroid into a joint, you can deteriorate the joint, you can soften cartilage, you can weaken the soft tissue structures around it. But depending on how severe someone's osteoarthritis is, sometimes it's bad enough, we're not gonna ruin that joint. It's already, you know, deteriorated. We're just trying to improve someone's quality of life. Corticosteroids, again, if someone has a corticosteroid injection and we put that anti-inflammatory directly into the joint, then they may not need pain medications. They may not need anti-inflammatories. You know, they can function better and exercise better, and they can just be happier. So what I tell patients is that with cortisone, almost everyone with knee arthritis is better with cortisone. I can't tell them how long it will last, and it's just variable. It could last 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, 20 years. The shorter it lasts, you know, then I tell them if cortisone isn't really being effective, that tells you how bad your arthritis is. And, you know, if joint replacement is an option for you, you might want to just be thinking about it, because that's not the alternative for everyone. But I'm just saying, you know, cortisone's not working, your arthritis has gotten pretty bad. I do have patients who come in regularly for cortisone, when they come in, we'll have them follow up and we try and wait and see how long that cortisone lasts. Like I said, it's variable. If it lasts less than 3 months, that is the minimum amount of time that we like between injections. Again, because we don't, even someone with a bad joint, we don't want to completely destroy that joint. But I do let all my diabetic patients know that it absolutely will raise their blood sugars. So that's discussion that we have. Then there are hyaluronic acid injections. I usually will try cortisone first because I can do it right in the office that day. Hyaluronic acid injections, if you don't have Medicare, we have to get approval through insurance companies before we can do them. And oftentimes they want to know that you've tried cortisone, that you've been to physical therapy, that you've been on an anti-inflammatory. But the different types of hyaluronic acid, so different companies make this, and it's a little different in how thick it is, or maybe how many injections that you have to give. Synvisc was the original brand. It comes in 3 injections, and again, these are weekly injections. You come in once a week for either 3 weeks for Synvisc. Synvisc has a single injection. Gel 1 is 1. Euflexa Orthovisc are 3. Hyalgen and Suparts are 5. You know, there are some studies that will say that this is not effective. There are other studies that say that it is. I would just tell you in my practice, I'd say about 60% of my patients will respond to this, and I don't know who that is until we try. But I have a good number of patients that will come in on a regular basis. And so for most patients, this can be repeated at 6-month intervals. Some patients last longer than 6 months. They may last 6 months or a year or 2 years. But at 6 months, insurance will allow us to repeat the injection. So I do have people who come in every 6 months, and you know, they know when that 6 month is coming because the medicine wears off. Some of the more alternative or newer therapies, so prolotherapy. If you hear about prolotherapy, prolotherapy is when they're an injection of a high glucose or dextrose solution. It is, although there are some studies that show it can be helpful, there are not enough studies to that it's been approved by insurance companies for them to pay for it, so it's out of pocket. It's not something that I know I'm not injecting it in Strongsville. I have a couple partners that are injecting or doing prolotherapy. So Dr. Dominic King, I spoke with specifically, he's actually going to be in charge of our regenerative medicine section. He's doing prolotherapy, and what he said is he charges $50 an injection. He, for his patients that respond to it, can see relief in usually two or three injections. And it's variable how long it lasts, but that's cash. PRP, if you hear about PRP, it's platelet-rich plasma. And so the picture here shows you what they do is they actually draw your blood. And we don't have this centrifuge in Strongsville. They have it at our sports health center, which is in Garfield Heights. Again, there is some data showing some patients show improvement with PRP injections, but not enough that the insurance companies will compensate for it. This is a $500 injection. Exactly. That's what everybody says when I tell them about it. And there's not a money-back guarantee. So they draw your blood, and the thought is it's the platelets in the blood that contain, again, actually the inflammatory factors. It's your inflammatory factors that promote healing, and the thought is that you're taking those factors and trying to get organization of the inflammation to reduce pain and improve function. You're not regenerating cartilage. But the centrifuge spins down your blood to put the red blood cells here and the platelets and the plasma here, and that gets re-injected into your joint. Stem cells are the newest hot topic, and actually studies at this point are not showing good evidence to support stem cells for knee osteoarthritis. But stem cells can come from a variety of places. Again, they can come from your adipose tissue. There are mesenchymal stem cells. There are amniotic stem cells that don't necessarily come from, again, a fetus or an infant, but can come from the lining. And so obviously there's a lot of up-and-coming research with stem cells, but at this point, those will be out of pocket when the stem cells can be injected not just into a potential joint, but to tendons. Or ligaments, and those are going to run about $2,500 with no money back guarantee.
Thank you for listening to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts. For more information, please visit our website at clevelandclinic.org/health.